the necessary by eliminating the unnecessary, and emphasizes the real by disregarding the superficial which obscures the real. In this respect symbolism verges toward the diagrammatic, for through diagrams processes are made evident. Phenomenon, when stripped of its outer part, reveals the laws by which it exists and manifests, being chiefly concerned with those few primary principles which are the basis of infinite diversity. Philosophy finds in symbolism not only a language singularly qualified to disseminate fundamental premises, but a method whereby universal ideas are communicated without passing them through the sphere of particulars. Symbolism thus embodies most fully the requisites of the perfect medium of education. Every symbol is a definite stimulus to the mind, and has the delightful faculty of reflecting the moods of the mind attempting to analyze its parts. In other words, a symbol always means what we think it means. Dealing with incorporeal substance, it takes on, Chamkleean-like, the interpretive attitudes of its interpreter. Through the symbols, the individual thus discovers not what symbols mean but rather what he knows himself. In the effort to understand what the first symbolist concealed under his figures, the resources of the mind are stimulated to reveal their own fecundity. Thus emblematic figures and fables draw out from the individual analyzing them the sum and substance of his own understanding. By studying symbols men learn about themselves, for they read into the figures their own hopes and aspirations, their own concepts of universal order, and their own understanding of divine agency. To some degree is thus explained the diversity of codes by which the affairs of men are regulated. Life itself is a symbol, and each must interpret it according to the convictions of his own soul. As we look about, we see a universe which, whether we know it or not, is simply our inner convictions reflected back to us from the polished surface of nature. In Lazarus Left, Eugene O'Neill causes his hero to thus taunt Gaius Caligula, "Dire of Tiberius Caesar, but what do you matter, O deathly important one? Put yourself that symbolism, the universal language." 339. Question: as a jester I or you a speck of dust danced in the wind. Then laugh, dancing. Laugh yes to your insignificance. Thereby will be born your new greatness. *. Tragic is the plight of the tragedian whose only audience is himself. Life is for each man a solitary cell whose walls are mirrors. Terrified is Caligula by the faces he makes. But I tell you to laugh in the mirror, that seeing your life gay, you may begin to live as a guest, and not as a condemned one. The non-philosophic suffer from a disease which may best be termed superficiality. Man's thinking ever fails because of its shallowness. He often mistakes breadth for depth, believing that with but a hasty scrutiny he can become familiar with any object. Superficiality generally springs from indifference and necessarily produces mediocrity. Our interests ever lie with the familiar, and for the unfamiliar we have no emotion save indifference. By stimulating interest, philosophy causes man to regard an ever-widening circle of incident as a proper field for his speculation. Thus the man, formerly oblivious to the wonders of the asterisk universe about him, suddenly comes to realize their existence, and with growing enthusiasm applies himself to the garnering of knowledge. The study of symbolism causes the mind to develop what may be defined as philosophic suspicion. Instead of accepting things at their face value, the symbolist searches for their hidden motives, those invisible agencies which are the animate causes of apparently inanimate objects. When the mind comes instinctively to regard forms as the outer garments of realities, great strides have been taken in the rationalization of the entire nature. Man begins to know as soon as he divests himself of the illusion that the universe is material and matter the divine reality. From this realization it is but a step to the comprehension that truth does not exist in matter but must be sought for behind the veil of matter. The physical, or irrational, mind is incapable of comprehending a single absolute fact, for abiding in the sphere of relative conclusions it necessarily lacks the accuracy of exact procedure. Symbolism discloses the relationship of an intangible agent to its tangible subject, it renders 340 lectures on Ancient philosophy conceivable that interval between the invisible which is the fact and the visible which is the fancy. Even a photograph is fanciful and misleading when compared to a cleverly drawn caricature, for while the caricature may but slightly resemble the physical appearance it is still more discerning than the camera's eye. Our physical personalities thus reveal us as we seem to be, but our intangible individualities continually reveal us as we are. Unfortunately for others, but comfortable for ourselves, the number able to read the intangible characteristics are few, otherwise our mortification would overwhelm us. Yet, in reality, our truest friend is the one who points out to us that which it is so difficult for us to estimate for ourselves. Namely, the quality and compatibility of our intangible parts. Symbolism should be employed throughout the process of education, for by it two definite ends are attainable. First, the student will instinctively reveal to the teacher the constitution of his reasoning part by the interpretation he places upon the symbols. Second, the student will be stimulated to originality and thereby preserve the peculiar technique of his own rational processes. The death of originality is the death of genius. Symbolism encourages originality, and hence is productive of genius. Symbols can be devised to induce almost any desired phase of thought or emotion. By the use of emblematic figures alone, abnormality can be corrected and subnormality raised to a normal state. Paracelsus discovered that words written upon parchment when held up before animals produce as definite results as though the words were spoken, although it is evident that the animal cannot read combinations of letters. Magical symbols, and curious figures, radiate definite impressions, and from the realization of this fact must ultimately emerge a new form of corrective therapy in which the medicine will be administered through the channel of sight. The eyes are peculiarly responsive and the process of visualization already borders upon the psychic, for the impressions transmitted by the eyes to the brain are exceedingly subtle and powerful beyond imagination. The reactions set up through the sight of definite forms or patterns have not yet been symbolism, the universal language 341. Thoroughly catalogued. When this work is finished, we will understand far more intelligently the motives producing joy and sorrow, sickness and health, vice and virtue, the environment contacted by the individual through the medium of the eyes molds him profoundly, and even his status in the world itself is a key to the temperaments that surge within his breast. In his general introduction to psychoanalysis, Freud attempts to relate certain primitive motives of the soul with dreams, in this way disclosing a subconscious faculty of association in the human mind by which external objects, through either appearance or use, become media for the expression of psychic impulses. Freud is dealing with what Plato would call the animal soul, that part of the psychic nature which has assumed the idea of generation and which constitutes the ceaseless urge toward the establishment of forms. Obsessed With the idea of polarity, the generating soul causes to flow from itself those impulses which Freud analyzes under the general subject of sex psychology. He maintains that the peculiar soul power which manifests while the functioning organism is asleep is concerned primarily with the principles of generation, and the sleep symbols are largely of a phallic nature. This is incontestable evidence that the earliest religions of mankind were priapic cults and based upon the generating urge of the soul. Clothing itself in appropriate forms, this impulse resulted in strange fables and figures which are now almost dissociated from the primary impulses that inspired them. Though having but few interests, the animal soul often employs a diversity of symbols to signify its attitudes. The sands of emblems and figures are used to represent a single idea. The animal soul is interested in neither religion nor philosophy, and our mental concepts are its playthings. The animal soul is primarily concerned with the laws of attraction and reproduction. Its duty is to perpetuate the species, and it knows no ethics beyond this limited field. Freud infers that dream symbols can be reduced to a very simple alphabet of symbolism. Clothing its urges in the 342 lectures on ancient philosophy. Familiar, the soul creates its alphabet during physical infancy and childhood and retains it throughout life. As humanity thus preserves in its religion and philosophy the simple elements which dominated its attitudes during the most primitive periods, so the adult man or woman clothes these soul impulses in those figures and similes which were impressed upon the outer nature during adolescence. It is comparatively easy to understand how most symbols come to have a phallic import. All forms are generations, and all generations are emblematic of the processes by which they themselves came into being. To the individual who functions in the animal nature that is, where the rational soul has not disengaged itself from the involvements of the corporeal senses, there is no sphere of interpretation above that of generation. To those who by the disciplines and procedures of the higher life have transmuted or regenerated their inferior natures, a loftier sphere of interpretation is rendered apprehensible. Transcending the idea of generation, the philosopher discovers in the symbol a meaning more exalted than that concerned with reproductive processes. Not only is there the animal soul which clings tenaciously to form, but there is also the divine, rational soul which verges ever toward reality. Above that part which conceives generation to be the supreme function, there is that which contemplates the deathlessness and permanence of the supreme good, realizing that divinity is ungenerate and transcends in every respect the limitations of mortal procedure. Symbols consequently change their meanings according to the level of intelligence upon which their interpreter functions. The purpose of symbols is to uncover the limitations of mortal consciousness by continually emphasizing the insufficiency of the interpretations placed upon them. Confronted by a symbol, every man recognizes the uncertainties of his own nature. Being never sure that he is correct in his interpretation, he is made to realize his heritage in that common uncertainty, shared by all ages and all men. The insufficiency of modern so-called knowledge is evident the moment the mind is invited to reflect upon problems involving certitudes thus faced.